Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Betty Kovac, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 1-888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. Good evening to you, Bob, and happy anniversary.
Yeah, well, it's what Fran's referring to, as she just informed me, was that I'm kind of oblivious to these
and don't know anniversary.
No, but this is our fifth anniversary of being on the air.
Signs of Life Radio.
I believe we've been broadcasting the show for 5 years.
Yeah.
And we have any celebrations? Are we going out to dinner? Or?
No, actually, we're going to have a special treat for our callers. If they call in and they say hello or have a question for Dr. Betty Kovac or even for us, or they want to share a story or a comment, we have free gifts for them tonight that we're going to be giving to our callers.
All right. I see you have a couple of news stories. I know you gather them during the week.
I always gather.
Yeah, what's the first one you pulled out there?
Let's talk about chickens.
Okay.
Chickens feel empathy, a new study says.
I'm not surprised.
And so the bigger question is, so if they feel empathy, why don't we feel empathy for what they feel? But basically what the study says, it's out of the University of Bristol, and it shows that chickens can feel empathy, a trait that was previously thought exclusive to humans. The study involved ruffling the feathers of little chicks with puffs of air. The chicks showed signs of distress at having their feathers ruffled, and the mother hen of each of the chicks showed signs of stress that their little chicks were being bothered.
Yeah, well, certainly that bond of motherly love the human species. But yeah, so the article says that, you know, previously thought that other species didn't exhibit, you know, empathy and show affection and things like that. But I think most people that owned pets had relationship with pets knew differently. And it's not even the animal species. I mean, we've talked about there have been experiments like Cleve Baxter did an experiment with a plant.
And it
turns out that in the opposite ends in the lab, when a live shrimp were put into boiling water, the plant, which was wired to electrodes on the other end of the lab, started spiking with all sorts of emotions.
Right, and that's crossing species. That's going from
living things have empathy for living things. You know?
So why don't we?
Yes.
We treat each other so badly, and we treat other species so badly. You know, we really should learn from There's a higher order of things, and we just are not respecting it. And maybe that's why life here in the physical world is not as nice as it could be.
Well, we need to pay more attention to the chickens.
We certainly do. We're chickens.
Yeah. Another story there about the woman with the lottery.
Yes. Yeah. This was quite interesting. There was a woman who, Violet and Alan Large, won last year in the lottery $11.2 million.
This was here or in England?
Where was this?
It's not important.
It's a lottery, and it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they gave it all away except for a mere $200,000 that they said basically to keep their house running, particularly since Violet, the wife, was undergoing treatment for ovarian cancer, and that was kind of sucking up a lot of money. They stayed living in their same farmhouse. They drove the same old truck. They lived the same lives that they had been living for decades. They just gave away all this money.
Yeah, that's always fascinating to me. You know, you wonder the motivation, behind it, but certainly she was already apparently, terminally ill. So
and 79 years old.
So she realized, what good is money? The adage that you're not taking it with you, you can't take it with you.
And I think a lot of people who suffer the loss of somebody close to them also take on that kind of a view of material things. That what is the importance of it? It's sort of, that loss of health, loss of life, gives you a better perspective on the materialism in our lives and how little it means.
Yeah, and I know that you read to me some of the various outlets that receive, money and a lot of worthy causes. But also you mentioned that some of the money, went to the church. So you wonder if part of that is, in certain religions that you're led to believe that if you contribute money to the church, that will affect your...
And God will take care of you.
Yeah, so it's sort of a bargaining chip. I always wonder about that.
Well, don't you think in all kinds of houses of worship, the leaders throw that at their congregation, maybe not directly or in so many words, but, that's their main plug for collecting money.
Yeah, well, whatever the motivation, you have to give them a lot of credit, and not too many people have the compassion and the courage to give away $11 million. So,
it's an amazing thing, an absolutely amazing thing, but I can fully understand the point of view.
Yeah. Last night we had our afterlife discussion group here in New York, and as many of our listeners know, we do hold these groups throughout the many states in the United States. So if you're interested in one, you can write.
In joining one or in running one, because they're we train and we get them up, and people are hankering to go to them, and there's not necessarily somebody in the area that
right.
is willing to lead them.
You can go to the website
just a little form to complete.
Yeah, and to put an inquiry, and then when there's people in your area, we'll match it up. But I was thinking about it last night. In our group, the subject came up. So there was a woman in the group that had an out-of-body experience, in which she was brought to the other side, and she expressed the interest of being with, the deceased loved one, who said, no, you need to go back. And this was so common that we hear among near-death experiencers, where they reach that threshold, that decision point, and they're told to come back. And, when you think about it, I guess if you're told to come back, you have to be told that for a reason, right? So that the next logical step is, there is a purpose to our life.
Right. Otherwise, that implies strongly there's a purpose to your life.
Right. So if you think your life is random,
try having an out-of-body experience.
No, I mean, they use that, that it's certainly evidential. It's such a common thing, a theme among many, many near-death experiences, of course, not all, but a large percentage of them. So that really makes you think about... as we go about, certainly as we go about our lives, everything does seem to be random. But when you hear that kind of an evidence and you're told that there's more of it, then, of course, you wonder, well, what is the purpose? The people, they're not told what their purpose is in coming back. They're just told they have more to do. I guess that's, in a way, that's frustrating. You have to figure out, what the heck am I supposed to be doing?
I think that's what everybody longs to. What's our purpose here in life? Now, haven't you asked that question your whole life?
Yeah, and the biggest one of the biggest cases that you can make for the afterlife is it just doesn't make sense that this is meaningless. It just makes no sense.
No, I think Melissa had put it into perspective maybe last gathering when she said just your purpose very basically should just be to leave the world a better place than you found it in.
Well, let's certainly can't argue with that. We're going to go to our break right now, and when we come back, we are going to have Dr. Betty Kovach. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The Forever Family Foundation will be hosting its much-sought-after annual fundraising event, Night of Mediums, on 11-11-11 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York at 7 p.m. Enjoy a scrumptious dinner while seated at a table of only 12 people as a Foundation-certified medium joins you following dessert to conduct spirit communication for your table only. It's a terrific opportunity to not only get readings in an intimate setting, but to enjoy a good meal and help the Foundation at the same time. For reservations and information, call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707. Or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Betty Kovach. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Betty Kovach received her PhD from the University of California, Irvine. It was in comparative literature and the theory of symbolic language. She studied extensively and taught in Europe and the U.S., She is Professor Emerita at Pasadena City College. Her expertise in literature, writing, mythology, and symbolic language helped her to find meaning in her own personal tragedies and serves as an inspiration to all those who have suffered the loss of a loved one. Her book, The Miracle of Death, There Is Nothing But Life, helps to open minds to the reality of unseen dimensions. Welcome, Dr. Kovach. So nice to have you back with us.
Thank you so much.
And You know, where I'd like to start, I mean, I've heard you say, and you write about, you know, that death is the greatest mystery of life. So, you know, as we contemplate the unknown, what awaits us, I mean, in what ways does that affect the way we live our physical lives?
I think it affects us in every way, whether we're aware of it or not. If we have the experience of a continuation of life, I'm trying to find the word actually to even describe other dimensions, but if we have that experience, then that does not leave this life an isolated part that's not connected to anything else. Suddenly we realize that we are a part of the universe and that there's no way that we could not have some role to play in the universe. So it gives dimension and meaning, really, to life. Once we have that sense that there is a continuation, that this is not just a fragment and a meaningless fragment at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess most things that we experience in our physical lives, they tend to foster the belief that we're loners, that we're isolated, that we're really connected to no one, when the opposite, you know, is true. So I guess what you're saying is that, you know, this the recognition that we are connected and that death is not final gives us a little bit of breathing room where we can explore different things and live a fuller life. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I really do believe that in our evolution, and I think we probably had achieved it before and then lost it again, that we realize that we have the ability to connect with other dimensions in the universe, and that when we do that, it gives such a different perspective to what we're doing here. First of all, it just would have to be so much more pleasurable to be able to experience beyond what we experience here when we think of just the physical life. When we begin to see the physical life as just a sort of coagulation of all of those energies from another dimension, and that when that physical part of it disperses, that what created it is still very vibrant, very much alive, that it just gives us, I think, such a deep pleasure and a deep joy that we just can't have when we see the physical world as all there is. And I think you're right. So many of us grew up in the Western worldview that there's nothing but the physical world, and even though I never accepted it consciously, I was programmed by it and had a terrible fear that this was really true, that there is nothing but this, it's a fluke, and that we come in and we go out, and that's the end of it. That's a terrible way to have to live.
Mm. Well, ultimately, it was personal experience that changed your view, I mean, not your research.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a funny thing. Sometimes I would be having an experience and realize that it was a kind of ritual that I had actually researched earlier. And it was so different that I didn't even recognize it as the same. So I think that reading and doing research helped me to keep an open mind to possibilities. But it wasn't until, 2 years really before the deaths began in my family, I did go to Peru and I worked with shamans, and I think I just finished my PhD and I took that time to really get away from the left brain and try to just be present in life and see if I could connect to anything other than the physical world. And it was very, very hard because I had so many doubts. Even though I thought I was consciously open, there was that rigid programming that I had received through the university and through just being alive in the Western world. And
yeah,
it took a long time to break that down. But when the deaths came, that was the most powerful breaking down, you might say, of those rigid belief systems.
Mm. You know, I mean, well, something that we haven't talked about in the past very much, I mean, obviously you're an authority in mythology and symbolic language, and I think a great many people, when they think of, if you say the word myth to them, They would put myth in the same category as a fairy tale. You know, an interesting story, but there's really no truth in it. So, I mean, are there any truths that we can learn from mythology and symbolic language?
Oh, yeah. And that was, thank God I had studied that. But I think I had studied symbolic language because I was interested in dreams, and I was hoping that there'd be some meaning somewhere, and maybe I could find something there. But yes, it's just like a dream. There is that dream maker or that visionary within each one of us, and these stories are the soul's way of communicating to us. And throughout ages, they have communicated to us through fairy tales, they're almost even more concentrated right out of the human psyche, and myths as well, that these are stories, they're soul stories, stories that came to us because there would be no way that we could explain something rationally. It just didn't make sense. But out of a story, we could live it and understand it. So the most profound experience of the human species is in dream and vision and myths and fairy tales. And it is true, even the word myth in the Western world in English has come, it did mean for so long just a myth, something that's totally untrue. And that's because we had so denied everything that had to do with the right brain or the visionary or the dreamer. We had so negated it, and I think we're suffering still so much from that.
And myths and these archetypal energies, I mean, they have a life of their own, right? I mean, you can perhaps, you know, when we dream, you know, we're tapping into this collective energy.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there are different levels of dreams. I mean, one time I had a dream that my gas was leaking from my car. Well, it was. That was a very helpful dream. But we know when we have the big dreams and that we do tap into that deep knowledge, that deep soul knowledge that is within us. And so many people, you know, write about losing a child in death or a spouse or someone they love, and they want so much to communicate with that person. Of course, we all do. But sometimes most of them are aware, though, that the dream does give them that communication. But so many people are not aware that the language between these two dimensions is very subtle, and it will very often come in a dream or just in a feeling. But there are so many, many ways we can tap into that deep quantum field or soul field and be in touch with anyone we love.
Yeah, and it's so, the concept is hard for a lot of people, especially in our culture, because, you know, we have fostered the belief that somehow, you know, we need middlemen to make the connections for us. You know, we need clergy like to act as a broker, you know, or we need mediums to provide conduits, you know. But are we all capable of this direct, you know, inner experience?
Oh, this is something I think that resounding yes is that that is who we are. There is everything in us that makes that possible. But until we can open ourselves to that and actually feel and know we are in communication, then I think a medium can help us. I know you and Fran have seen people who were so convinced that the medium did have a message from someone they loved, and that helped to open the door for them. But absolutely, we all have this potential, and I think that is what we are learning now, that we are moving into a world that, through science, which you and Fran have wonderful scientists on who can confirm scientifically the continuation of consciousness, and we have people who've been in actual death experience, near-death experience, and we've had mediums who have wonderful contact. So it's just the next step is for us all to know that this is our heritage. This is who we are. We're not meant to live in isolation from other dimensions.
Mm. And, you talk about this being the next step, but do you sometimes think that maybe, you know, we're always searching for what the meaning of our lives are, what the purpose is. So maybe it's as simple as the purpose of our lives is to discover this connectivity and yeah. to make our own connections to the ultimate source.
Oh, God, there couldn't be anything more important than that.
Yeah.
Because once we do that, we can, you know, there are 1,000 or unlimited ways that we can do things in the world that are meaningful to us and others. And also, I think that we could have a lot more joy. Not long ago, I was thinking about that vision that I had right after Pishti, my son, died. And I felt a spiral of beings coming to the earth because we had called them, and we knew we were at a critical point, and we needed this consciousness to help us, to just nudge us into a stronger energy, you might say. And when they were spiraling down, they said, they were chanting, and I heard them say so clearly, our brothers and sisters on the earth are dreaming a terrible dream. And that was so powerful to me, to think that we are dreaming a dream of our limits, of what we can't do and who we are not. And not long ago when I was thinking that, I had just a split second of that powerful sense of how we had such a limited vision of ourselves and how much we're suffering on the earth because of that. And it was so sad to me, but I also think that we're moving beyond that. And, yeah, I agree with you. What greater meaning could our lives have than that we make connection with that dimension? And each time we make that connection, it makes it easier for other people to make it. And so that we will, as a species, I think, live in both dimensions.
Mm. I know you spent a lot of time studying, you know, the ancient civilizations and ancient symbols and so forth. So, you know, when we look at things like the discoveries of all these ancient symbols that are in caves and rock shelters throughout, you know, Africa and Europe, what do you infer from these about our conscious evolution?
Yeah, that's interesting because for so long, of course, people in the West studied the caves and had strange things to say about them. But I think that with all that's been discovered in Africa, as well as in France, I mean, and really throughout the world, it's real. One thing is very clear, and that is that they were in touch with another dimension. In the caves, for example, you know, when they drew these marvelous pictures, you could see that it was almost a sense that the animals were emerging from that other side and bulging out into this dimension. Is that with all of the study of those caves in Africa, I mean, and even there were in our time still shamans in Africa who said what many of those drawings meant, is that they were definitely in touch with another dimension. I think it's been so sad that in the Western world that we have over and over again experience the mystic life, that experience in which it's so natural for us to be in touch with the other world, and then politically and perhaps even unconsciously, we've lost it. And that's been a very sad thing. I think the Western world is perhaps the only culture that hasn't had a deep and profound sense of the sacred. So we've lost it, and then we regain it, we lose it. But I think now science is leading us, and since we've been so addicted to the left brain, we need science to tell us how this could really happen, how life can continue after the physical body is gone. And since they are able to do that, I think that opens us. It's almost as though the whole Western world has to go through a detox, that the earth itself is trying to detox itself from those terrible, terrible limited views of the past.
We certainly... you know, we talk about, you know, gaining knowledge from looking within, you know, instead of outwardly, but from looking back in history, the more I read and learn, you know, we really need to take a step back and in order to progress, you know. It certainly seems that way. You know, we talked about, we haven't talked much about, you know, the personal loss, and then quite frankly, I know you were very inspirational to both Fran and myself, you know, because when we look at you and, you know, as somebody who lost you know, a son and a husband, you know, and a mother, all in car accidents, and went on to live a very meaningful life. You know, it is inspirational for a lot of us that have suffered, you know, the loss of a loved one. But what was the motivation of you in writing The Miracle of Death?
Well, you know, I was so amazed with the experiences that Ishvan, my husband, and I had, and the experiences with our son, Pishti. And it was as though we were in another dimension. And we did keep record of that. I mean, we knew that this was incredible, that what was happening. So we recorded it. And my first impulse was I just had to get it down. I had to write it. I had to save it somehow and also make sense of it, try to put it all together. But I kept saying all the way through it, if one person could be helped by reading this book, then it would have been worthwhile. If it could give one person hope that there is another dimension, then it would have been worthwhile. So I think those two reasons, to understand everything better myself and to save it, record it, but also to some way help that terrible, terrible sorrow that can come when we feel that someone is gone and that we've totally lost them. That's the most horrible feeling I think that we can experience, is someone that we love so deeply that love could be gone, and we can't bear that. And I think we can't bear it because it simply isn't true, but we can experience it as true. So I just hope that the book would help in that.
Well, I think it certainly has. You know, when I read about your son Pishti, I mean, he had dreams before he died, you know, of the accident that ultimately resulted in his death. And as you reflect back, when he first told you about it, you know, what were your thoughts when you first learned of these visions that he was having?
Well, you know, he was almost 12 and he had that dream, and he told me about it and wanted me to write it down, and he drew it and wrote it down too. I worried a lot. And then finally I thought, well, and he was very concerned about it. He was like, Mom, what do you think it means? And so, you know, we found a way to look at it, that maybe it was a death to the boy. He was puberty age and he was becoming a man. But it was too detailed. You know, he saw the hospital, the different colors of white, the chrome. I mean, it was so detailed that it worried me. And the same with the dream I had when I was pregnant with him. You know, when I saw a young boy, of course, in those days we didn't know whether it was going to be a boy or a girl, but I saw a young boy coming through the gate, and on his side it said death, and on my side it said birth. And he came in, and he had just a sack he was carrying but didn't have much in it, and he walked just a short distance and immediately walked up the mountain, walked out the same side, and went out in bright golden light. That really worried me, because I knew that it was about, I just knew there's another part of the dream which made me know that it was about the child I was carrying.
Yeah.
But you know, somehow or other we find ways of looking at dreams, and sometimes they are literal, sometimes they're symbolic, and after a while we got over them. And yet there was another one that Pishti had in the last year of his life, which was so specific, about a huge crash and going back and forth to the other side and coming back. And it's interesting, because in that dream I said to him, you know, come back for the body. And when I was in the hospital, the first thing I said to him was, you know, if you choose to go, then we will let you go. But if you choose to live, you can come back whole and well. But if you do choose to go, come back for the body. Don't leave the body. And I thought, when I saw that dream, I had heard him say it before, but then I forgot it. And then we found it after his death, and I thought, my God, you know. It just helps us to know life is so phenomenal. It's so much more than we have ever yet imagined.
It's pretty powerful. We are talking with Dr. Betty Kovach. And her book is called The Miracle of Death. The website is www.kamlak.com, and you can learn all about the other wonderful work that they do by logging on to that. What we're going to do now is, before we continue this conversation, is we're going to go to a short break, and we come back. There's much more to discuss with Dr. Betty Kovach, so stay with us.
Is there chocolate in the afterlife? Don't miss the 5th Annual Forever Family Foundations Conference on Saturday, November 12th at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in New York. This all-day conference features presentations by medical doctor Lee Bounum, offering scientific evidence of an afterlife, and paranormal evidence by noted parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach. A full sit-down luncheon will be highlighted by a formal chocolate tasting, and guests will be treated to two sessions of spirit communication conducted by certified mediums Angelina Diana and Teresa Caputo. Call 631-425-7707. Again, that's 631-425-7707, or visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Betty Kovach. This show is sponsored by the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. 7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation announcements for you. With these hard economic times upon us, some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show. They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you on the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. If you don't see what you want on Amazon.com, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items, and for each search, we will receive a donation. And when you find your items, a portion of what you spend is, again, donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing. There are five chances to win a one-hour medium reading. Support our work with a $5 chance or five chances for $20 or even more if you visit the website. Please visit that website, www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for more information on entering the raffle or mail your check to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. Our annual conference, Is There Chocolate in the Afterlife?, with a free feature Friday night fundraiser, Night of Mediums. It's set for November 11th. That's 11-11-11, and the conference on 11-12-11 at the Sheraton Long Island Hotel in Hophog, New York. We have early bird pricing and special group rate hotel rooms. It's a limited seating conference and fundraiser, so book early to avoid disappointment. Again, you can find those links and buy buttons for your reservations on the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Holidays Past, an evening of spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums in three locations so far this December. December 3rd, Joanne Gerber will be in Bethel, Connecticut. December 10th, Angelina Diana will be in Natick, Massachusetts with afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And on December 17th, Teresa Caputo will be in Melville, New York. It's $25 a seat for members, $35 for non-members. Reserve now. They fill quickly. Bob?
And we're back talking with Dr. Betty Kovach. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. Betty Kovach's website is kamlak.com. Betty, we were talking before, and you told us about a lot of powerful visions and dreams that you had before your son's death. Many of us question when we have experiences, whether or not they were real or not. And I know in your case, after the death of your son, these dreams and visions continued, not only with you, but with your husband. So do you think the fact that you had the dreams and visions before the deaths helped you to solidify the reality, so to speak, of them, after the deaths? Not sure if I made myself clear on that.
No, you did. I think that it was so powerful, his presence, that pretty much is what did it. When I was inside a vision with Pishti, it was so powerful. I had no doubt whatsoever, and neither did Ishvan. But when I was not inside the vision, actually experiencing it, then the old toxic worldview came back that there's nothing and that can't be real. And so I went through a lot of that even after his death, in spite of the fact that those visions were so powerful. My husband didn't. Once he had the experience, he just said, I had no idea what you were talking about, and I will never look at the earth in the same way again. And he didn't, but I had that programming to deal with. And finally, I think it finally was dissolved. But I think it wasn't so much that we'd had the dreams before as the literal power of his presence after his death.
I get
it. It was strange, too, because I look back at that now and I think it's like I took it. It was like we were in some kind of sphere in which it was happening, and I was almost taking it for granted that it was happening. And, of course, as I look back at it now, I think that what an incredible time we had, you know, during those two and a half years before then Ishvan was killed. But now I see them as so much more phenomenal than I was able to know then.
Mm-hmm.
We have a caller. Would you like to take a call, Dr. Kovach?
Sure.
We have Victor from Los Angeles on line three.
Oh, uh-huh. Victor?
Hi, Daddy.
Victor, I haven't heard from you in a long time.
I know. I just love this program. But I wanted to, you know, it's so appropriate because lately, you know, I suppose because I'm at that point in life where people are starting to make a transition, and I'm so aware of how people are overwhelmed by grief. It's like a couple of days ago, a friend of mine was just bereft. Her mother passed, and you know, she acted, you know, like death was not a part of the pattern here.
Yeah.
And it was so difficult to communicate to her. And so I finally said, you know, I think what the trouble is in our culture is that we avoid it our whole lives. It should be taught from the time we go to first grade that we're ultimately going to have to leave here.
Oh, and, Victor, you've really put your hand on it. I mean, it's exactly that.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it's just terrible. Then I told her my experience when I lost my friend Scott. I said, you know, it just came to me so strongly the night he died, and every night we would have dinner and talk about the day, and so I wrote him a letter, and I said, just because you're not here, the relationship's not going to end. And last night, as I did my letter, it was the 2,500th letter, and I packed a huge box of letters the other day that I had to put in storage. But it's just that people are freaked, as a rule, when you discuss that anything that pertains to that. And I don't know what that is about our culture that people are so averse to it.
Well, I think you've really said it, Victor, and I'm so glad that you called and that you brought that up. Because, and you know, Bob, you had said earlier, if we knew about the other dimension, how would that change our lives? If we could live in a world in which it was so clear to us that this is a phenomenal phase that we're going through, this life here in the physical body, and that we will then step out of the body and go back into another dimension, and that we will do, this is creativity. This is what we will do many times. But mm-hmm. I think if we kept that balance in our mind, is that here we have this space of life. Well, it's all life. As Bishti said, there's nothing but life. But that we have this space, it could become so sacred and so special to us because we would know that it's within that tension between being in the physical body and then being in spirit body. It would be such a wonderful thing if we could be in a culture, if our culture would evolve to the point in which we will talk about that, we will know that, and we will value those moments that we do have physical life. That reminds me, too, of something I wanted to mention because I have it in the book, too, but when Ishvan was coming out of a vision one time, he was just still so taken with what he'd experienced. And he said to me, Chichi, death is as divine as life. Hold them, hold birth and death in both hands. Play with them, balance them. This is the divine game. And I think that's what you're talking about, Victor. It is the divine game, and we don't yet know how to play it because we're trying to ignore one half of it. But that's what really, it's a wonderful polarity that we're playing, and if we could see it as a sacred game of balance and coming into the physical and going out again, we would be able to deal with someone stepping out of the physical body much more easily.
Well, you know, I said to a friend of mine who's sort of sympathetic to my thought and our thoughts about death, and I said, you know, it just doesn't fit into the capitalist model. There's not much money to be made from death, you know, other than funerals and things. But it's a downer, and people are very frightened of it, and I think that's it. I have there's a young lady I went to a grief support group at Cedars here in Los Angeles, and there's a girl there who lost her mother like over 8 years ago, and she is still in the midst of very, very heavy grief, and she's eating her way through it. I mean, she eats Oreo cookies with Pepsi Colas, and she calls me, and I can't be of any help other than the fact that she just rehearses her mother's life over and over like a litany. And I thought, what a terrible thing that she does it. And she's so closed off. I once tried to approach the subject and recommended books, Betty, your book, as a matter of fact, and it was like, you know, she just glazed over. And it was like the people don't want to help themselves with that. It's like voodoo to them.
Well, it is a kind of, the whole culture is glazed over. It's a good word for it. Although I do think that we are breaking through that. There's just so much that is happening that the next generation and then the one after that is going to be very different in their relationship to death, I do think.
Yeah. Well, I think that you hit it on the head there, and we are breaking through. Although unfortunately, you know, a large percentage of the mental health professionals today counsel people in grief by giving them ways to disassociate, mm-hmm. you know, with their loved ones that have passed. And when you bring up the concept of continuing a relationship, you get that horror look or that glazed look that Victor talked about and that you know, Betty, and people find that concept of continuing a relationship very, very difficult to grasp. But I think that you're right. There seems to be a wave of people now that are starting to turn things around and viewing death quite differently, and that in large part is due to, you know, people like you that go public about these things.
Well, and you know, there was like a young Fran, where we have this wonderful show with so much information. I mean, I wish there had been something like that when I was in high school.
Oh yeah, you know, I was watching a show the other night. They were interviewing, just a short interview of a young man, a scientist, a neuroscientist, who's written a book called Incognito, which I'd love to read. Anyway, it's about brain chemistry. And he said how complex the brain is, how thought works, and it just boggles the mind. But anyway, he said something very interesting, which I've heard from another scientist. He said that, you know, that this could all be, this what we're experiencing, someone else's virtual reality. And I thought, wow, you know, that, and he says that we won't know that till we die. And I thought, that's so interesting, because at least that's like a crack in the door of going beyond the conventional thinking.
At least looking at it in another way. But I think that it's so important for us to be aware that we are divine and that we are creative beings, and that every thought and every feeling that we have is creating the world around us, and that we really can be both independent and a part of this great unity. I just think it's so important for us to know deep within ourselves that we are divine and that we are in many ways creating our world.
Yes, he
well,
talked
Victor,
about
thanks
that.
So much for calling tonight.
Well, thank you.
Oh, and Victor, before you leave, Victor, can you just send us an email to radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org with your mailing address, because we have an anniversary gift for you?
Yeah, I have. You have my, I'm on your mailing address.
Yeah, but we don't know who Victor is.
Yeah, so
okay.
just send us an email so we don't have to divulge your email, and we'll get the gift.
Oh, I don't care. Seems like everybody has it anyway. Okay, well,
take
thank
care,
you.
Victor.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Victor.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Betty, I know we don't have much time left, but one of the most profound things, you know, in the book is your husband, Ishvan, you know, felt your son Pishti say, you know, after Pishti's death, you know, birth and death are events in time and space. And then Pishti showed him a circle of light, you know, and how did your husband, Ishvan, interpret that at the time?
Oh, it was it was so powerful for him that when he, you know, because when he was with Pishti in a vision, he would forget that Pishti was dead in this dimension. And then he would remember it, but he said it was not the same anymore. The whole concept of death wasn't the same. But when Pishti said that to him, birth and death are events in time and space, Dad. And then he showed him the circle of light. And that was so powerful for Ishvan. I think he just said, I guess his interpretation was that he had just never experienced anything like it. He knew that this circle of light was a continuum, that there was no way that there could be a loss of any kind, that there was nothing but life. And we were playing it out in infinite ways throughout the universe, but nothing can be lost. And there is nothing but the continuation of this great creative game of life.
Well,
he was just so moved by
that's
it.
A perfect ending, and I think the abundance of love in your household, you know, that trite saying, "Love never dies," but in your case, it's living proof. And Betty, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I want to remind everybody that the book is called "The Miracle of Death." There is a link to that on our website. You can go to visit Kamlak, KAMLAK.com to learn more about the wonderful work that they do. And thank you so much, and we hope to see you real soon.
Thank you both, Bob and Fran. And
thank you.
Take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay, good. Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lachman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, and all the victims of the Japan tsunami. And now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this: to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masuro Omoto back on May 9th, 2010. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.